is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, a week ago it was World Ag Day. We're going to come back and take a look at the subject today with local farmer Evan Cruz. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
So I'm sure there were a lot of World Ag Day celebrations that I missed while I was gone last week.
You know, there actually was one. The county commissioners invited several of us farmers and ag industry people in. They issued a proclamation. And it was really a nice little ceremony they did. And so as a ag producer, I really appreciate that.
So going through this year, current economic situation, a bit bumpy to say the least. How does that impact local farms this year? What do you think?
Yeah, the thing that the worldwide ag industry is looking at right now is producing a shortage of calories. You know, when you look at what farmers do, we produce, obviously some produce fiber to wear instead of eat. But the majority of agriculture is producing calories for people to consume. And with what's going on over in Eastern Europe and Russia right now, there's a real risk at the total caloric production of agriculture being a little bit less than what we'd like to see. And, you know, that isn't necessarily just because of what's happening between Ukraine and Russia, although that's a big area of concern. Much of it has been going on before that, with some of the restrictions on fertilizer and other inputs that play a big part in what we do as farmers. So, you know, does Douglas County produce a significant number of calories for the world? No, but we do our part. Luckily, a lot of the food that's produced here is grown by converting stuff we can't eat, grasses, into things we can. You know, we have a lot of ranchers that produce animals that enter the food supply, and so that's a little bit insulated from some of the greater issues you see with crops getting planted right now and fertilizer being very expensive. But it doesn't mean that we're insulated from that because we're not what people view as big ag. We are seeing people they're facing much bigger fertilizer bills than you would expect. I think we're a little better off here than some areas. There's people who are looking to plant corn who can't get fertilizer. And the way their farms are set up, you plant and fertilize at the same time. So their planting is being delayed. And that will have some big impacts. So I'm hoping that Douglas County will be a little bit better insulated from some of this stuff. We're still going to see it in the prices we pay for inputs, but I don't think that we're going to see the same major issues here that some other, you know, corn, soybean, cotton type areas will.
So talk about fertilizer in terms of how much of costs percentage-wise have they gone up in the last year or so?
A lot is the easiest way to describe it. We're seeing more than double on a lot of things, and I was just checking in with the co-op fertilizer plant, and every time I ask, the prices go up. So people who, I guess, were aggressive and said, well, I'm going to fertilize no matter what, and got it done, probably got the best deals. People who were waiting to see if prices would come back down, it hasn't panned out. And even from a ranching aspect, if you have, you know, a certain number of animals, they've got to have a certain amount of feed. When you fertilize a pasture and manage it properly, you know, it's solar powered production that happens there. You do give some extra inputs. If you don't have that feed in the pasture, you're going to have to buy hay or some other form of feed to supplement, or you're going to have to reduce your herd size. So, you know, it's always a game. We're always investing in the current season's production, or, you know, a lot of livestock growers are investing maybe 2 years out in what they expect to get. With what a lot of people are seeing at the grocery store with increased prices, I think producers are hoping to see some return on these increased prices we're paying for inputs.
So if your fertilizer prices go up, you get through the season, you go to sell your crops at different points along the way, any idea how those are going to be going up?
I think the general assumption is that food is going to be more expensive. We're already seeing that at the grocery store, although a lot of that stuff isn't necessarily tied to, well, it can't be tied to this year's production. So as a producer, we're hoping that we see a benefit off of that with increased prices for our goods, but there's no guarantees. There never is.
So as we've kind of moved into a new phase of the pandemic, how does that impact farms?
I think that there's a lot of farms who are relieved. The past 2 years, the state between OSHA and the state health authority has put a lot of restrictions on how farmers manage their employees. And these are things that generally take pretty big investment. So you in other places of the state, probably it happens more where, say, a big cherry farm has on-farm housing for hundreds of people. And OSHA came in and said, well, you can't house the same number. You have to cut that in half. And that was always part of bringing a crew in for cherry harvest. Some of those things we're going to see relax quite a bit. So in some respects, that'll be back to normal. And there were some real headaches that that ag producers had to go through to get their crops harvested. And if you recall, some people didn't get their crops harvested.
What about other impacts from state government that are going to be something you have to deal with?
The biggest thing right now is for ag producers that have employees. The state is looking at some pretty severe restrictions for heat and smoke to protect workers. And it is in the rulemaking process, nothing set in stone yet, but the way it's looking, it's going to be a pretty pretty big burden on the employers to basically force the employees to do things they might not want to in certain situations. And the difficulty is we're a very diverse state, and rules that may work in the northern Willamette Valley based on the weather they have there really don't work for places in southern Oregon or, you know, over in the far east side of the state, Treasure Valley area. So we're hoping that the bureaucracies involved will listen and be flexible, but that's to be seen.
So if you get into a time maybe in August when you've got a hot streak going, it happens to coincide with when you need to get a lot of things harvested, is that going to be the issue?
It very well could be, and the way the rules are set up, it may be that farmers are more likely to let crops go to waste than get them harvested with these new rules.
Is it possible, and I don't know how this might work, to start earlier or work later in the evening, or does that come into lighting issues and things like that?
It sure can, yeah. If you're not set up to work at night, where I'm not sure why you would be unless it was there are some apples that actually pick better at night because they control the light and you can see which ones are ripe with the special lighting. But those unique cases justify themselves. The other situations, if you don't normally need to do it, I'm not sure why you'd want to invest the money to just in the off chance that you're going to get shut down for heat.
And going around with, buying a bunch of flashlights probably isn't the ideal way to solve that.
If it would even pass the safety regulations, yeah, I'm not sure how that would work.
Well, the other thing we're looking at, and I haven't looked at the U.S. drought monitor lately, but we all know we're in some level of drought here in the county. How do you expect us to fare?
I'm concerned about it. We in Douglas County, we have a unique situation where, we have the North Umpqua River has quite a expansive aquifer up in the mountains, and we have Galesville Reservoir, which has been operated better than some of the other irrigation reservoirs in the state. So our neighbors to the south down in the Rogue Valley are being told they get no irrigation water this year, and we're waiting for a report from the water master at this month's Farm Bureau meeting But I'm hopeful we'll be in a better situation. People that don't have access to either the North River or Galesville water are probably going to see, unless we have major changes in the weather patterns, they're probably going to see pretty early shutoffs again this year.
I think a lot of people, maybe initially after we had that record heat last year and the 113 temperature and all of that, some people said, well, that'll never happen again. And now they're saying, well, it could be worse. Maybe.
Yeah, it's tough to say. My hope is that, you know, you said that chance of rain shows up on Sunday again. And my hope is that we get into a good cycle of some good spring weather, put some rain down, and then give us a few days to do some work in the dry and send in another system. We need rain dances from everybody.
So far, though, we're way behind.
We are. And there's catching up is statistically probably not going to happen.
All right, more when we come back. Evan Cruz, looking at agriculture. They interview a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1247 Inside Douglas County News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson coming at 1. David Littlejohn on True Wealth Radio, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. On tomorrow's Inside Douglas County, we'll look at the bond levy on the May ballot with the Roseburg School Board, Roseburg School District, and Superintendent Jared Corden, Board Chair Rebecca Larson will be in on tomorrow's program to talk more about that. Last week, World Ag Day, we're connecting with local farmer Evan Cruz to talk about agriculture. Let's go back to the drought issue for a moment. Just how big, how many problems were caused by all that that you felt, not just that week, that month, but for the rest of the year?
Last year, we saw water rights curtailed. So for people who don't know, there's two ways to get irrigation water for farmland. One is to have a water right, which gives you a right to, say, water in the South Umpqua River or the North Umpqua River. And when the river flow gets down below a certain point, you lose that right because there's other people with older water rights than you have, and they need their water since their rights are older. So there's kind of this process of elimination. And we saw water rights cut off last year earlier than for some land on the South Umpqua River. We saw it cut off earlier than any other year. And I believe there were many people who saw their water rights shut off who had never seen it before. The other way to get water is a contract for stored water in Galesville. Now, obviously, you have to have access to water that flows from Galesville, so that basically leaves the South Umpqua River below Galesville and the main Umpqua River. Those landowners have access to that water. Now, it's a lot of our ag land, but it isn't all of it. So with those two things, I think you see people looking a little bit more about purchasing stored water rather than just relying on water rights. I think it makes for a busy time for the Water Master's office.
What about agriculture in terms of big ag versus smaller family farms? For Oregon, maybe even this part of Oregon, how much big ag is there?
I don't think that there is, with what people view as big ag, there really isn't big ag here. When you look at some of the largest operations we have, whether it's some of the large vineyards, I mean, they're local families running the large vineyards. The Norris Blueberry Farms, it's the Norris's. Everybody knows of or knows them personally. So when you hear on a nationwide level the talk of big ag, the tax structure and everything encouraged farms to incorporate several decades ago. And so, I mean, even our farm is a corporation, but we're not big ag, we're a family. So the vast majority of farming is family farms. Even the large operations down in California and Arizona, where they grow a lot of food, they're family farms. They really are. So farming is mostly a family enterprise. There are a lot of people at work, but there's also a lot of families.
You mentioned the Farm Bureau earlier. Explain what that is and what it does around here.
In Douglas County, we have a little bit of confusion because the Douglas County Farmers Co-op used to be known as the Douglas County Farm Bureau. But Douglas County Farm Bureau is part of Oregon Farm Bureau, and it's really an agriculture advocacy group. One of the big problems with advocating for agriculture is that farmers are pretty busy. So being part of Douglas County Farm Bureau and Oregon Farm Bureau, we pool our resources together and have some staff that does the advocacy work on our behalf up in Salem and local government down here. Our elected officials have a lot of different people pulling them different ways to get what they want, and it's important to have a strong voice representing ag. And one of those reasons is once ag land goes out of agricultural production, it's really, really difficult to get it back. Is it impossible? In some cases, yes, it is. In other situations, it just isn't economically feasible. So things like protecting farmland and protecting the ability for farms to stay productive is really important.
What kind of percentage of folks, of farmers, are involved with the Farm Bureau on some level?
I'm not sure I have that number. We have several hundred members in Douglas County. The ones that are really active in the advocacy work is a smaller group. But there's some big operations that are part of that. And Douglas County Farm Bureau isn't the only game or the only name in the game. There are, there's a nut commission for filbert growers or hazelnuts. There's a blueberry commission. There's wine growers groups as well. So we aren't the only one in town or in the state. In general, Farm Bureau is the only one that does a good job of advocating for all agriculture sectors instead of just one specific sector.
So for the rest of ag, when you're growing crops and all of that, it sounds like that's kind of one group. And then the vineyard folks growing grapes for wine is kind of a different set of people.
It is, although there's some overlap. We have members who grow wine grapes, but they also grow some other crops too. And so they participate with Oregon Farm Bureau as well as their specific crop commissions.
So for you this year, what's your path forward, kind of a shift for you?
Well, so the future of Cruz Farms is probably a little bit less visible to the majority of the community. I am currently working on specialty grass seed crops, alfalfa and hay. And we also have two small U-pick patches. It'll be U-pick cherries and blueberries, which should be, early summer when those are available. So that'll still be available to the public. But I'm really focusing on a smaller number of crops instead of the 60 we used to do for the market. Hopefully we have some news about the future of the market that we can share soon. But we don't have anything yet.
What are some of the things, maybe a couple of things at least, about being in the agricultural industry locally that a lot of people, us city folks, don't know about?
Well, it's a pretty tight community, and very supportive. Maybe when people think about farming, they think about that old ideal, and it still is alive. If you need help in the ag community, you don't have to ask very many times before you find somebody who's willing to give you a hand and get things done. And it just goes around. It is also one of the interesting things about it is we don't have any closed doors that we work behind. When I think about Blue Heron Vineyards with everybody driving by on one of the busiest out-of-town roads, everybody sees what they're doing. There's nothing that's hidden, nothing behind closed doors. So it's a very transparent and open industry to work in. And there's something special about that.
All right. Evan Cruz, looking at World Ag Day. It was last week, but we're covering it today on Inside Douglas County. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.